Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about Spree Commerce, a really great way to sell things on the net. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 210, recorded May 9th, 2012. Spree Commerce. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week, or as often as I can get here to the big podium, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, the projects you might never heard of, the projects you might be using day by day, and you don't even know that it's open source. I love to bring different projects on to let you get a whole variety of things that are going on. This week is no exception, but before we get to the project, let me bring on my co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Randall. Glad to be here.
Very cool. Very cool. It looks like you're in the brick house today, huh?
In the brick house again. It's always nice to come to the brick house because all I have to do is sit down and everybody does everything. All the technical things are taken care of. So I just have to drink my coffee and think about what's going on.
Sounds clever. Sounds great. I have to set up my entire setup here every time. It takes about a half hour to set everything up and about 20 minutes to tear everything down just before I can tape one of these shows. So we have a really great guest on today. We have Schofield, one of those two. We'll have to ask him how that's actually pronounced. I've probably been mispronouncing him for 6 months already, but he is the head honcho, the creator, the organizer for Spree Commerce. Spree Commerce is a collection of software. I believe it's written in Ruby on Rails that does all the e-commerce stuff. Like that's most people would think of it in terms of like a shopping cart and maybe some management software behind the scenes to manage inventory or a pick and pull for warehouses and things like that. So apparently this is sort of an end-to-end solution, although from what I understand, it's fairly customizable too. Still fairly early in the cycle, but they even have a conference coming up, which usually legitimizes things quite well for all the way up to the point of having a conference. Have you looked into this at all, Aaron?
I did some dabbling in e-commerce a long time ago, before the word was actually coined, I think. So I know a little bit about it. Obviously, I'm familiar with like Amazon and putting things in shopping carts and things like that. So, it'll be interesting to see how this actually fits into the whole hierarchy of websites and how they run their businesses.
Yeah, and I've worked with lots of shopping carts. In fact, there's a classic shopping cart. I think it was originally called Minivan, but went on to be called Interchange that Red Hat has eventually took over and has been used. I think it all goes way back to 1994. So we're talking back to the early days of e-commerce. So I have some familiarity with Minivan back when I was using that. I was actually set up a couple sites with Minivan. So we'll have to have them compare that with this as well. So let's see. Oh, well, I can do that. Also, just a brief note. Last week, I was sort of talking off the cuff with Simon Phipps about Z-modem, because we were going old school last week. It was all about BBS and things like that. And I said Z-modem, of course, was created by Ward Cunningham, the guy that went on to create the wiki and stuff. And I got my two famous Portlanders mixed up. But Ward Cunningham, in fact, is a Portlander and did go on to invent the wiki and all that sort of stuff. But it was Chuck Forsberg, another famous Portlander, who invented Z-modem. So I apologize, Chuck. I've met both of these guys at various conferences. At some point, I must have just merged the two. Like, they both did exactly the same thing or something, but I apologize for that. So sorry, Chuck, and sorry, Ward, for attributing Z-modem to you if that's something that you don't exactly want to be done that. So before we get started, though, we do have a very important announcement, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, which means you save time, money, and hassle. There are several easy ways to instantly access streaming movies and TV shows with Netflix. You can watch Netflix movies and TV shows on your Mac or PC or iPad. You can watch on your iPhone and some Android phones as well. If you have a gaming console like an Xbox 360, a PS3, or a Nintendo Wii, you can watch Netflix right on your TV. If you're not a gamer, you can watch Netflix on your TV with an Apple TV box or a Roku box. They're inexpensive and easy to use. With Netflix, you can watch movies and TV shows instantly using any of these devices. And you can begin watching a movie or show on one device and then finish on a different one. Whichever way you choose to access Netflix, you can watch as many movies and TV shows as you want, anytime you want, and you can cancel anytime. So try Netflix today for 30 days for free. Go to netflix.com/twit, that's T-W-I-T. Be sure to use this URL when you sign up for your free trial, netflix.com/twit. We thank Netflix for their support of Twit and Floss Weekly, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. And now, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Sean Schofield, hope I got that right. Welcome to the show.
Schofield, yeah.
Well, blew it right away. Sorry about that. That means I've been your name wrong for like the last 6 months. I'm really sorry about that. But it's in any case, welcome to the show. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm here in Bethesda, Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C.
Ah, I've been in Bethesda, actually. I think one of my friends lives out that way. So a couple times I've been to D.C. I've also tried to sneak up to Bethesda as well. So got the geography worked out. So at the beginning of the show, I did sort of a moderately okay job, I hope, of describing what Spree Commerce is. But let's hear it right from the horse's mouth, as it were. What's the sort of what problem is Spree Commerce solving, and how does it do that?
Well, Spree is a completely open source e-commerce solution built on Ruby on Rails. And I created about 5 years ago to address a problem when I was just a freelance. You know, the problem I was solving was I was a freelance developer and there wasn't a solution that was really flexible enough and fast enough to build like a reasonable e-commerce solution for someone. So when I just started out as a freelancer in the e-commerce space, the tools were kind of like OS Commerce and a host of other things, but nothing that could really stand the test of time, that was easy to upgrade, easy to customize. As soon as the customers wanted, you know, the slightest like changes, you started getting, you know, deeper and deeper into this like, you know, PHP nightmare. And so I decided to look into a different solution, and one based on Ruby, which I was also exploring at the time.
Now, further for our audience, a few of them probably know what e-commerce means, but can you explain that in sort of general terms?
Yeah, well, the way I'm using it, at least, is you know, buying and selling things on the internet. And people often think of e-commerce as just like, oh, you mean a shopping cart, which is, that's the most obvious piece of it, which is the user-facing piece of it. But the whole, you know, maintaining inventory, filling orders, the whole back-end part, there's a everything that you need to kind of transact online and buying and selling is, you know, what I would consider e-commerce. So Spree does all of that.
So I would be reaching for Spree if I, say, had something I wanted to sell online, maybe goods or services or some combination of both. What's the basic process then for me to go from I have this inventory of, you know, 39 different things, and this comes in three colors and that sort of stuff. How do you get from there to having a website?
Okay, well, I'll go over kind of what you need in general and then talk about maybe how you do in Spree. But so in general, first thing you need is a payment processing. I mean, that's not the first thing you need, but it's probably the biggest blocker, right? Like, you're going to need some way to accept payments online, and that typically takes a long time to set up. So that might be almost the first things you want to think of if you're building an e-commerce store, is just, how am I going to accept payments? You know, PayPal, you know, process credit cards, Google Wallet, whatever. Then you're going to need to figure out what items you're selling and the variations. Like, okay, we're going to have these kinds of sizes, these kinds of colors, or whatever kind of subtleties to your products that you want to model. And you'll need some images of your products, and you'll need to find some software to do it. Nowadays it's a lot easier because you can get a AWS, you know, or a cloud instance spun up pretty quick. You'll need to know some coding if you're going to use Spree in its true open source sort of incarnation. Like, you know, we originally designed it for developers. It's not like just a drop it in with one little script and run. Although we can talk later about how we're kind of moving in that direction.
So I would then take, so the payment, obviously, clearly, in order for this to work, I've got to get paid. And you mentioned PayPal and a bunch of other solutions out there. And I understand,
shipping,
of course,
taxes too.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
and being a small businessman, I understand that, you know, getting paid is not only important, but that's where the trickiness comes in, especially for online commerce, because there's so many ways that fraud can come about from that. And the people, banks don't really want you to have any kind of fraud going on. So you said there's some coding involved. This isn't just something where I can go and download a website or do an apt-get install and all I'm dealing with is web interfaces. Then this isn't a kind of a shopping cart or a system where you can just do it all from the web.
Well, there are a few ways you can use Spree to sell. So I'll start with the original vision for Spree was, it was just a simple e-commerce solution, kind of beginning to end, designed for developers to install. And yeah, you needed to have a server that was capable of running a Rails application in order to, you know, get something up and running. We've since moved on to Puppet. We have a Puppet install, so you can actually sign up for a free deployment service that will just deploy everything and build your server for you automatically using Puppet, which is another great open source project. Mm-hmm. And we have we're in beta right now for a SaaS version or software as a service version, where you could, if you don't have the technical skills to install it yourself, you can. There's a hosted version of it. That's a commercial product, though.
Okay, so I'm going to have to do, if I don't want to use like the software as a service solution, I'm going to have to figure out, I'm going to have to write some programs myself.
I mean, you need to know some basic things, like how to set up an Apache server or Nginx or some kind of web server, right? And you need a database like MySQL or Postgres or something. But if you're familiar with installing software, you know, then, you know, or like if you know how to get a PHP application up and running, you can probably do a Rails application. It's getting easier and easier to do that these days. So, then it's pretty, I mean, there's a couple lines to install. Like it's, you know, you have to check out the source code or drop in the binary, right? And then go. So there's a few commands just to bootstrap it, and it's, you know, and then it's menu driven from there. But yeah, I mean, it's
pretty similar to, like, you know, setting up a WordPress. Like if you could set up a WordPress blog on your own server, sounds like you'd probably be able to do this.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And WordPress is a good analogy, right? They have WordPress.com where they have like a hosted version for, there are people who just don't want to deal even with minimal server configuration. But we find that there are a lot of technical store owners out there, people who are kind of like hobbyists, you know, on the side, you program a little on the side, or, you know, kind of tech savvy, and they muscle through and they figure out how to get up and running. I mean, of course we help them, and with these things like Puppet, really just kind of, you know, with Puppet, it is just a one line script that you just paste into your bash. So it's getting pretty easy.
Right. Now that you said this is based on Ruby, right? So do I need to be running, I obviously need to be running Ruby on my server, but my site doesn't have to be Ruby, right? The site could be something else, PHP or whatever.
Yeah, you can combine PHP and Rails applications together on the same server.
Okay, good. So there's no restrictions there. One thing I noticed when I was actually doing some research, I actually did some research for this.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it's a minimal. I'll say that there's a minimal amount of research. But one thing I noticed was, you know, I just did a quick Google search for open source e-commerce software, and there's like a bazillion of them. So, I mean, are there different... You started to get into this a little bit. Are there different categories? I'm assuming one category is hosted versus non-hosted, or SaaS versus you know, running it on your own server. Sounds like maybe a differentiator. But what are the different categories of e-commerce softwares? Are there other ones?
Yeah, sure. By the way, how do we do in the search rankings? Do we come up pretty quick?
Yeah, I mean, with a few more. There was a few more that came up.
Okay, that's all right.
Let's see. There was
there are others.
Yeah, just to let you know, and you can, maybe this will be a good way for you to compare. I mean, there was Magento.
Magento, probably, yeah.
OS Commerce came up.
PrestaShop.
OpenCart. Yeah, exactly. Yep, PrestaShop came up. So those were kind of the top. There's a few more. But yeah.
UberCart, I think, that's a Drupal one. Yeah.
So how would you compare? I mean, are you in the same league as all these, or how can you differentiate between the various ones so people can decide?
Yeah, a good way to think of it is there's a quadrant of on one axis you have small and large, and the other axis you have like hosted and you know, on-site or SaaS. Okay, so you have like by large meaning like, okay, stores that do $500,000+ a year type of volume, right? And, or maybe say $1 million or more. And then, because really if you're doing $1 million or more, you're already kind of in the, in revenue per year, you're already in the, I don't know what the percentage is, but you're in the elite kind of large category of e-commerce. It has a really long tail. But so you have kind of large and small universe, and then you have on-premises, which doesn't have to literally be in your house, right? But just you're managing the hosting yourself somehow.
Right.
Like through VPS or something. And then you have SaaS. So there's a very, and they're not equally distributed, you know, where the landscape falls in there. So the smallest little piece is that is large SaaS. Okay. There's a company called Demandware that does that. And it's very, very small. I saw their S1 when they filed to go public. I think they have under 100 customers or something like that. So that's a pretty small niche. And then you have large on-premises, and there's some enterprise-like type software that's not, none of which is open source, right, that tends to dominate in that space. There's things like Hybris and GSI and things. These are hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, I think, for licensing and things like that. And then you have on the small side, which is probably most relevant to your audience, you have on the SaaS side, you have like Shopify, Volusion, like Magento has a product now, Magento Go. And then now we have a product called Spreeworks. And then on the on-premises, it's dominated by, on-premises small is dominated by open source. And so the people there besides Spree would be Magento and PrestoShop are probably the biggest there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, there are a lot of old OS commerce, you know, things. And PHP dominates in that space, or did at least. I mean, it's, you know, it's shifting, but PHP is by far probably the most popular choice in that space.
Right. That's what I was thinking. So let's talk about that a little bit. What made you choose Rails? Are there advantages to Rails over PHP for doing these kinds of transactional e-commerce software suites?
Yeah, I think in my experience there definitely was. I'm a Java guy, I guess by training. I did Java for about 10 years, and I did use PHP when I was kind of in my wilderness time, like looking for something other than Java to code in. Especially when I went freelance, right? Like Java is definitely not the language to do it in because it's just too slow to develop in, when I was a freelancer for the first time, I was like, wow, okay, like, hey, you know, I don't have the government paying me to write programs that take 2 years to build. I got to get something done quick, right? So time is of the essence when you're getting paid, you know, by the hour, or even worse, you're on a full or fixed price contract, which a lot of freelancers are. So I wanted something I could develop in quickly. And I tried PHP to see, well, okay, what's here, you know, and there were a lot of tools available in PHP. And I found that there's some great stuff out there and you can get up and running. I built a pretty big Drupal site at one point during that maybe a 6 month period. But so PHP is great because there's so many tools and there's so many people out there who know it or claim to know it at least. And you can get something up pretty quickly and easily. But I found PHP to be more difficult from a maintenance perspective, like maintaining an application, customizing it further. Testing was pretty, you know, was weak to non-existent when I was doing this about 5 years ago. So I think Rails has some, and Ruby has some advantages. Ruby, the programming language, is extremely flexible. So when it comes to the customization problem, like, oh, I want to customize, you know, maybe 10% of this store to make it the way I want it. How do I take advantages of upgrades to the underlying software that, you know, without breaking my customizations? Like that was something I was really interested in trying to solve, and we've made a lot of strides there, but we're not finished yet. But Ruby lends itself to that, and testing is another great benefit, I think, of Ruby over other languages, or certainly PHP.
Right.
And finally, performance is a bit of an issue. I mean, you can get PHP to perform, but Ruby is a little bit faster in my experience.
Okay, good. So getting back to the implementation of this, because you mentioned Drupal, you'd worked with PHP, you were working with Drupal for a while. Like if I run a Drupal site or a WordPress site or something like that, so in the Drupal land, it would be like a plugin that you could install. I'm assuming, like, once you got everything set up, once you've got Spree Commerce, all the back end stuff running, if I was running something like that, would there be some sort of a plugin or I guess my question is, are developers of these CMSs making it easy to interoperate with Spree Commerce by means of plugins and things like that? Or is it a lot of manual, behind the curtains type command line type stuff I have to do to actually get it to interact with a CMS system like that?
Yeah, so CMS integration is a topic that comes up a lot in our mailing lists, and PHP and Rails integration is even doubly, I guess, complicated, right? So the biggest issue there is, even if you take out the language, there is an authentication, permissions kind of issue. Like, do you want the users of your blog to be able to check out, on the shopping cart? And, those systems are architected completely differently using different database tables, sometimes, in the case of Drupal and Spree, to different programming languages. So, trying to merge the two is, that's a difficult challenge for all, e-commerce CMS kind of combination. So Drupal has UberCart, I think, is probably the most popular. I'm not an expert on Drupal, but Drupal has some plugins that just kind of work that way. But what you're going to find with any kind of plugin is that they're limited in what they can do. So as soon as you want to have some custom sort of functionality or behavior or change the workflow or change how information is presented or whatnot, you're going to run into barriers. So if you have a Drupal site or a WordPress site and you just want to sell a couple of t-shirts or something like this, it's probably a much more suitable option to just go with a plugin, right, for one of those things. But if your primary business is selling, then you want to start with e-commerce and then worry about the CMS later and vice versa. I think that would be my advice. So, you could always just have shop.example.com point to your Spree store and have example.com point to your Drupal store.
Sounds like you could probably take care of it pretty easily. Actually, as we were talking a few minutes ago, I had some interesting technical questions that always seem to come up when I'm talking about shopping carts and user interfaces and things like that.
Sure.
One of the things that drives me nuts is when some sort of store interface doesn't let me go off in two different directions in two different browser windows because the session information is all tied to a cookie or something like that. Does Spree Commerce allow me to actually have like two side-by-side comparison pages that have essentially different threads of conversation?
On the same site?
Yep.
Oh, so you just want to open like two windows and look at two different products?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's fine. I mean, that's just, right, the session should maintain across the domain, so that's no problem, yeah. You can even come back later and resume your work, right?
It's an interesting problem to solve because it means you also have to have essentially some sort of hidden field being thrown back and forth as your session maintainer. You can't have it as a cookie because a cookie is shared across all browser windows, and it would get very confused at that. So cool.
Yeah, there's some scripts that can also do session jumping. Like as long as you have both, there's some techniques for maintaining session across domains in Rails that are pretty good. A common pattern actually in e-commerce, I found out when I started, working with clients, is that a lot of store owners actually own multiple domains. So that's another interesting sort of issue that comes out. So a lot of people will brand their store with a few different domains, sometimes have different prices on the different stores, mm-hmm. and sometimes sell related products across them. So another interesting challenge is so Spree has a way to do this. There's an extension for having multiple storefronts, different domains, but one common backend, and to allow products to be shared across them. Like, again, these are kind of sophisticated use cases that a plugin for WordPress or whatever, that's not going to do it for you.
Why don't you describe the sort of different modules then that are available in the system? I mean, the customer facing shopping cart side is something we're really familiar with because that's what we're seeing all the time. But you talked about, say, inventory management and payment flow or something. Can you list the modules and tell us what each function is?
Sure, yeah. And I can tell you maybe a little bit about the philosophy or architecture behind it too, like why we do things the way we do. So what we found out after doing just a few stores with Spree was that the back end, the stuff that the store owner sees is actually the most useful and reusable part of the part of the puzzle. So that's the part that never changes. It almost, you know, maybe sometimes people change the logo, but the stuff that lists the orders, there's a lot of common functionality that almost all stores need, right? They all need to see a list of orders. They need to be able to look up a customer based on their email or their order number or the date they say they ordered or whatever. You need to be able to drill down and see the details of that order. You need to ship the order or maybe change the shipping method or modify the order further. Like I ordered, you know, whatever, and I decided that I don't want it anymore. Or we did this pet site one time and they said, I ordered this medicine, but I used ground shipping instead of express shipping and my cat died or whatever in the interim.
Oh.
So you should have paid for the overnight, man. But whatever, this happens routinely, apparently. So, you know, you're like, okay, for they, you know, they'll give them a rebate or like my cat's getting really sick. I decided I'm going to pay for the extra shipping, right? Let's tell it a more positive way, right? So, so the agent or the person on the phone will go in and has to be able to upgrade the order, change the shipping, and then make a determination. Like maybe they say, I want to charge them for that, or I'm going to take, you know, pity on them and just waive it and enter in like a, you know, an adjustment or so. Rebates to the credit card and charges to the card. And typically in e-commerce also, you're not supposed to charge the card until the item is ready to ship or has been dropped off to be shipped. Mm-hmm. So what you're supposed to do is authorize the card, like, and just kind of puts a placeholder on the card to say, hey, you know, we're going to charge, you know, $99 for this. And then once the order is ready to ship, then you capture the card and then it goes through on the credit. So that's another kind of back-end operation that would have to be done. So what we try to do with Spree, I don't know if you guys talk a lot about Rails on this show or not, but Rails has this philosophy that it's called opinionated software. And Rails just makes a few basic decisions or assumptions about how things are going to go. And then, you know, if everybody can kind of sort of follow along with that, you know, then Rails is right for you and it's easy to kind of get things done. But Rails doesn't try to solve everything for you. And it tries to just solve like the most general useful problems. And we take that same approach with Spree. So we call it opinionated e-commerce. And we really just try to solve 80, 90% of it really well and leave, and we don't even attempt to solve 10%, right? Like your coupons, like, or promotions, like how you want to, there's literally just so many ways you can spin a coupon or set up a promotion or offer. Like I want, you know, the second time they come and if they sign up for this, I want to do that. Like it's just so hard to be able to model everything in advance that, you know, we decided to just make things easier, put the emphasis on making things easier to customize instead of worrying about that last 10%. So that's part of the philosophy behind Spree.
So this means somebody that's fairly familiar with Rails then would be able to plug this in and customize it based on your documentation about where the hooks are.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so much easier to just to say, hey, look, if you could just write one or two lines of Ruby, you can have anything you want instead of us just saying no Ruby allowed. You have to just install it and can never code, right? So, I mean, there's like, for instance, shipping calculators. We have a couple of shipping calculators built in, but they're trivial, right? Like, okay, a flat rate. We have a flat rate shipping calculator, you know, so you can just say, hey, $10 for all shipments or whatever. But a lot of people have very complicated rules like, okay, hey, if it's more than this weight and it doesn't include an oversized item, then, you know, this, like, so say you sell over, you know, TVs and they have to be shipped separately, right? Like large enough TVs can't be shipped through UPS. So you might have to have a freight option, but you don't want to offer that option or require that option if the user hasn't bought a TV. So like, this is just super hard to model, like, in advance, right? But it's easy to just say, hey, we have a mechanism for tagging category, you know, tagging items with a shipping category. And then we have calculators that can be assigned to a shipping method. And then you can write your own, you know, calculator, which takes just a few lines and can do everything that you need to do.
So this is also an interesting problem in having something that's flexible like this for a framework, is that you, in order to actually implement some of these things, you have to be both somewhat smart as a programmer, but also have a fair amount of domain knowledge. Have you made that easier somehow?
I mean, it's super hard challenge as a programmer to write something that can be generally useful, right, in this area. So, I mean, the biggest challenge for me was just figuring out, along with all the people who work on it, right? So it's just figuring out how to make it useful enough so that any, you know, everybody can get use out of it, but not too limiting, so that, you know, as soon as you hit that feature you hate, you're stuck. I think in general, having domain knowledge is a big problem for e-commerce. This is something we're trying to solve with our hosted product. Mm-hmm. Just simplifying the choices down to like, hey, we're just going to pick a payment method for you. We're just going to pick a shipping method for you. You know what I mean? Like we're trying to make it so you can just get online 15 minutes processing payments and selling, you know, including getting the whole approved for the, you know, credit card part, because in general, it is too complicated. But a lot of store owners, you know, so that's for the people who are starting out. But people who have been selling online for 10 years and they want to take their store to the next level or whatever, they're already familiar with these problems. And, you know, they come to us with a list of grievances like, my current application can't do this, this, or this. So, I mean, the other thing I want to mention is that Spree is really modular. And this is something we occasionally ask our users, like, what do you like about Spree? And do little surveys. And the modularity and flexibility is where we get like high marks on. And people like that there's not too many things in Spree that you don't need. And if we've made and there's about six or so Ruby gems that make up, you know, Spree when you install it the standard way. And if you don't like how we do authentication, you can just throw out the authentication gem, right? The whole logging in and permission part. If you don't like how we do promotions, you can get rid of the promotions, you know, piece. So, that's also very unique. I don't know that many of the other e-commerce applications have it like that modular, but it's pretty easy to do with Ruby, and we've taken great pains to sort of make it modular. So some people have used just the data model. Like, they're like, oh, the data model is great, but I just don't, you know, I don't like the front end, and I have to use some, you know, enterprise kind of like back end thing for fulfillment. So people have used Spree and it's in pieces everywhere. Some people use it as a middle layer between a Yahoo store and something else. I mean, it's just weird how people, you know, end up using it.
So in some senses, you could say that this is actually more of a toolkit, a construction kit, or a framework for building e-commerce sites.
Yeah, I mean, it's complete. Like, there are people who just install it and use it, and it says powered by Spree at the bottom and everything, and, you know, same colors and fonts and whatever, right? And that's cool. And those people, I guess, they save money by not having to pay, you know, a hosted product or whatever, right? They have enough confidence to do that. But, you know, so some people are using it like that. But when we built it, it was more for developers and who had a big job to do, you know, or whatever, something more than just selling a couple t-shirts. And yeah, it was designed to just save a lot of time. Like, hey, let's all work together and build you know, a reasonable tool set that would be much more useful than, you know, having to, you know, it would save you time better than starting over on your own or building something from scratch.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things I'm also curious about, since I'm an old Perl guy and you knew this was going to come up eventually, how would you compare this to Interchange?
Interchange. I'm not a Perl guy, and I've actually never used Interchange. I worked a place that did quite a bit of Interchange. So, Interchange is the e-commerce solution that jumps to mind for Perl, but in general, e-commerce and Perl don't jump to mind very often for me. So,
that's fair.
Yeah. I mean, people, yeah. So I think it's quite popular. So I think language choice is a big, what people are familiar with in general. Okay. Like, even for, you know, creating software, like what people are used to is like how people kind of make decisions, right? They're kind of comfortable with like, I don't want to learn something new. So, so a lot of people go with what they know or what they're comfortable with. So people who know Perl will likely go to Interchange, and people who know Ruby would likely go to Spree, and people who have a lot of PHP experience are probably going to look at PHP solutions before they look at, you know, Ruby or Perl. But increasingly we are seeing some people who are learning Ruby because they're like, I'm learning Ruby because I want to use Spree, which is always really cool. To get that kind of feedback, like, all right, great. Like, they see something here and they're going to put some time in and learn some Ruby. So, you know, I hear good things about Interchange, but I haven't used it. So
I got to jump in here just to say that back in the day, before I think even e-commerce was around, I built a e-commerce site. I was selling hardware, basically reselling hardware. And I thought this would be a good way to make money, which it wasn't at all.
It's complicated, isn't it?
It absolutely is. But anyway, there wasn't a lot of good tools back then. So I wrote my own transaction mechanism using Perl. So I just wanted to throw that out there. It's one of the first things I did. I was actually using PayPal as the payment mechanism, because that took care of all the Visa, MasterCard crap. And this is when PayPal was brand new, and it worked out pretty good for a while until I got my first angry customer. And then I thought, okay, I'm done. It took me about 4 months to realize I wasn't going to continue doing that. Okay, that totally blew me off track. I was going to ask a bunch of interesting questions.
Well, nobody writes their own e-commerce software anymore. I could tell you that. Like, I mean, some people do and try, but it's definitely shifted to the point where people either use a hosted solution or they use an open source solution. Hardly anybody writes their own anymore.
There's no reason to. I mean, you know, people have got it down now, right? Like, you and other folks have pretty much got it down to a science, or as close to it as possible, where you can choose between a couple different projects that you want to use, depending on what you're doing. And there's something out there. It's not even worth it, I don't think, anymore for anyone to go write their own piece of software with all the complexities involved.
Yeah, you can always save time starting with someone else's and modifying it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when Spree got to be pretty popular. I mean, I started out just by myself working on it, and people would, you know, comment and chime in, but nobody was writing anything or helping until maybe about 6 months in. But you know, once you achieve that level of, this is more useful than if I had started by myself, you know, this is more useful than starting from scratch, then the project can keep going. And in general, there's a lot of e-commerce projects that have reached that level of maturity. So there's really no need to write your own.
Right. You mentioned this briefly, and I may have missed it while you were talking. I hope I didn't. But as far as the details for people that are wondering, maybe thinking about setting up their own shop, as far as, you know, Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, getting your credentials, because I'm assuming there's some place in the code where you put in your vendor ID and it kind of takes care of that stuff for you. Is it that simple of just putting in your vendor ID with those various vendors to get it to work? Or, you know, how complicated is it, that part of it, for people to get going?
Payment processing is the most painful part of e-commerce. It sucks. It's broken. It's not a proud moment, I guess, in capitalism, right? It's just not. It just doesn't work. So if you want, I can give you your listeners some cautionary tales about payment processing in general. Like, it's pretty. But let's just. I'll answer your question from a technical perspective. Yeah, like, once you simply sign up for a payment process and, you know, you can log on, get your credentials. You know, you go into an e-commerce, you know, most e-commerce software, you just select like what kind of gateway you want. Like, I'm using authorized.net, I'm using PayPal, whatever. And then you just drop and you copy and paste in your credentials. Like, and that's not too onerous. What's really onerous is getting those credentials in the first place, you know, getting approved for a payment plan and sorting through all the ones that you need to, you know, look at. And I would say in general, I didn't pay too much attention to payment processing initially when I got into e-commerce. I let the store owners just come to me and just say, hey, I want to use whatever. But over time, I've become more kind of aware of what's going on and looked more into what it's like. And it's a pretty shady business. Like, you've got a cartel of I don't understand quite honestly how it's not illegal, but you've got MasterCard and Visa have this like syndicate called Interchange. It's Interchange. And basically they rig the fees. Like, they publish a 38-page book or something of what the prices are going to be. Like, if you buy a credit, you use your MasterCard at a gas pump, or if you use an Amex, you know, for a foreign transaction, whatever, they set all the rates, you know. So right away, it's kind of sucks that those rates you have to, you know, but that's just, you know, price fixing at the top. Then you've got a bunch of layers on top. You've got banks and things. So the worst thing you can do if you are a credit card company is to go and to your, or if you're a store, is to go to your bank and ask, tell them you want to process credit cards. Like, don't do that. Like, you'll pay the most, because the banks make money on that, like, a lot, like 0.5% to 0.75%, sometimes 1%. And there's just layer after layer of middleman. And so what you want to do is try to pay as close to these like interchange fees as possible. And a big just caveat is to not go with the lowest rate that you see. People advertise these rates, but they're like the lowest rate under the most, you know, circumstances. And people think that they're going to pay that for their credit cards, and then they get their first bill and they're like, what? Like, I thought I was paying like 1.9% and I'm really paying 2.5 or 3 or whatever. And that's because they zing you on, you know, business cards and rewards cards, or business cards and rewards cards. I didn't realize this until I got onto the e-commerce side, but those rewards cards you have, like the merchants that you go to, they pay more. So, and that includes like charities, everybody. I mean, like anybody who you're paying with a credit card, if you're using your rewards card, they pay more, like, I don't know, close to 0.5% more. So then that's how they fund these reward cards with these charges. But then the intermediaries who resell the banks, I mean, who resell the credit card services, like they add charges on top of what that is. So you start to get into really high expensive rates when you get into this. So you got to be pretty careful about reading the files. There's some resources, you know, that you can use to find them. There's a good website called feefighters.com. We know a guy that runs that. You can do some pricing on different gateways. And we have, if you go to spreecommerce.com, there's a gateway that you can sign up for a gateway. It works with Spree or any other. You can use it with anything. It's kind of like a white label gateway, but we get a tiny small commission, and that just supports the open source part. But you know, if you go to your bank, so if you like open source, sign up for your credit cards through spreecommerce.com, I guess. We like the people. The bank that we work with is really good, and you pay the closest to reasonable rates that we can give you. And you know, to the extent that anyone's making money or giving a small donation to open source instead of, you know, Citibank.
Right, it's a good thing. So let me ask you. I know I can't call it a trend, but I've noticed that a lot of businesses are only doing PayPal or Google checkout these days, and some of them don't even have Visa, MasterCard, whatever. That something that you have seen more of now, that online transactions are becoming more popular and people are using these services? Or do you think that that's just that maybe that's not something that's going to last long term just because of the way business works?
I think all of that's going to go away. Like 10 years from now, credit cards and all the existing payment methods will probably go away. Like it's going to be a lot simpler, you know.
Like Google Wallet or you know, some of those things? I mean, are those... Because right now, those are truly point of sale devices right now. You go to Target, you use the thing, but online doesn't really have it's difficult to use your phone unless you're doing some sort of a email that, or you know, send the person a text. Maybe they answer it or send it back, and it goes through. I don't know how that would work.
Yeah, well, Google Wallets, they're working on something, right, to store credit cards in the phone. There's a ton of VC investment going on in this payment space and mobile payments. Like mobile and e-commerce combined are just like get everybody super excited. But I think, yeah, that's going to happen. But I think that that's just a transition step. You're still paying with Visa or MasterCard, and that's just, you know, that just seems like a really inefficient way to pay for things. When you look at, you know, 4, 5, 6%, you know, by the time it's all done for like on every transaction done on the internet, like is going, you know, that seems expensive when I have the money sitting right there in my account. So there's some cool companies out there that are doing, there's a company called Dwolla that's doing something that's going to be kind of like a PayPal like alternative where it's going to be bank to bank, like kind of on transfers. And there's these guys in Sweden called Klarna, and they have like an invoice kind of based system where they do some risk modeling. But the bottom line is you get invoice for what you buy online. And if you don't like what you've got, you send it back and then you're never charged, right? Like you can try it for 2 weeks and it's kind of like a COD, except you don't pay the person when they show up. It's you just invoiced. And then, you know, they check your credit and things, I guess, and make a decision about whether to send you the good. And they have all this fraud fighting stuff. But, you know, the vendor gets paid right away. You know, I've got the money. You want the money. It goes right from my bank to your bank. You know, like that kind of stuff has got to be what we got to get to. You know,
And not a lot of extra fees for the middleman.
Yeah, I think that PayPal is really popular. I'm sad to say, because it's really horrendous for a programmer to implement and deal with. But you know, PayPal I think is popular because it's somewhat easy to get started. As ridiculous as PayPal is, it's easier than getting a merchant account through a credit card company. So I think, you know, you kind of, and you can do it without talking to somebody, right? So you, it's kind of all automated. You just put in your bank account and whatever. And they're kind of viral. Like PayPal got really popular through eBay. And so you, you know, okay, once I have PayPal, it'll just be easier for me to buy stuff. So it kind of just becomes this little network of self-reinforcing, you know, PayPal. But so I think rate overall, the rates are not really much better on PayPal or Google Checkout, maybe a little bit better. And for people who are smaller merchants, every little bit counts.
Well, we could talk about this sort of stuff for hours, I think. There's probably so much complexity to it. But I want to get back a little bit more to the project just for a second here. Sure. Now, you started this by yourself some number of years ago. And then you did you get like a small core team together to keep developing it? And where has that gone now? What's the status of the project development?
Yeah, so I started kind of working on it myself and just, you know, created a mess. So this would be a little bit lesson in how to start an open source project, I guess. Well, I had also worked on other open source projects before. So I had a little bit of an idea of how they worked or how to you know, participate in one. But this was the first that I tried. So just started with, I just created a Google user group, put a message out there and said, hey, this is my idea. Stay tuned or whatever. I welcome all help suggestions. And like I said, after X number of months, people started coming by and actually helping. So very early on, I had a couple people overseas, actually, that were interested in stores where they were, and that helped jumpstart things a lot. So Brian Quinn, he's our CTO and longtime Floss Weekly listener, by the way.
Cool.
He said he had a store going on in Ireland that he wanted to build. And so, you know, it becomes like, okay, now the two of us are joining forces. There's another guy in Spain, and he wanted to a translation. So like, okay, hey, now we got to deal with, you know, multiple languages. And so that moved the project forward a lot. So yeah, I mean, it takes a few people. And actually e-commerce is more challenging than like a WordPress or Drupal kind of situation, open source, it turns out. Because what happens is a lot of developers don't specialize in e-commerce. They just build one every once in a while. So you have a person who's working on a project, they're really active submitting bugs or features or, you know, improving things. And then project's over and the next project's not e-commerce and then they're gone. So it's slower, I think, to build an open source e-commerce project because there seem to be less people who kind of just specialize in that. And those that do are kind of wedded to their existing tools like Magento and whatever. So, but yeah, eventually got momentum. Now we have a huge community. So I think we have almost 200 different people contribute to Spree now. And so it's quite big. We have conferences. We had our first conference in New York City. And can I do a plug? A shameless promotion?
Sure. Please,
okay,
please.
Shameless self-promotion. Okay. So we have a, this is important in general in e-commerce, I believe, like, we talked about Drupal. Dries Bottard, he's the creator of Drupal. He's also advisor to me in our company. He said very early on, he's like, you know, conferences are the lifeblood of your open source project. And it's important to meet in person and really encouraged us to do a conference. So, you know, because conferences are where we get together with our users and each other, people we work together with virtually, and meet in person and kind of sketch out the future of the project and make decisions about where things go and just exchange ideas. So we have a conference. If you're interested in e-commerce at all, or Ruby, or even tangential topics like Backbone or CoffeeScript, we have a great conference. If you go to spreeconf.com, we have a conference in Dublin, Ireland this summer. It's going to be in the Guinness storehouse, actually. It's a pretty unique venue there. So anyways, that's open. It's not just going to be e-commerce. We're going to have a lot of Ruby guys there. And some tutorials and tutoring and things. So anyways, having these conferences, great way to get people. We don't make money off these conferences. It's just about getting people engaged and pushing the software forward. So, I mean, GitHub has also been a huge boon to us in terms of moving a project forward.
And so how does project management actually work? Are you like the sole integrator and decider, or do you have a small team of people doing that, or what?
Yeah, so that's another cool part about, I guess, the Ruby and Rails community, at least, is much more decentralized. They tend to be with their projects. They're either one person or just a group. But, you know, at Apache, you would tend to have like a management committee and commit rights and things like this. But with the advent of Git and prevalence of GitHub, so everybody has a GitHub account in the Ruby space, at least, So you can easily fork the project, and not in the bad open source kind of fork way, like I'm permanently forking. Just create your own copy, create a little branch. Branches are really easy to create in Git. If you're not using Git, you should. You can, you know, easily identify, like, hey, I've got a fix. Here's the code. Everybody can try it. And so you don't really need to have, like, you don't need to have commit rights in order to improve the project, right? And if you don't like it, I can just keep using my version of it, and that's fine. Or I can get together and get a bunch of other people to you know, agitate for my change to be pulled in. And so, but technically I'm the benevolent dictator for life on that model. I mean, we don't have a committee. We don't have bylaws or whatever. And I've never, you know, had to veto anybody, but we work with consensus. We have about 5 or 6 people, you know, that are active, that are core members, that have the rights to, to actually commit to the main repository. And, but anybody can and is encouraged to contribute. So, we just have a lazy consensus, sort of like, anybody object, you know, and we have, you know, we kind of are on the same page as to what the standard should be for, like, hey, is this something, the main thing we have to be careful about is, like, is this a pet project for one particular person, or is this generally useful? Like, I think that's the most difficult thing to kind of navigate with you have to be very disciplined when running an open source project, like, hey, this thing, I'm going to ruin this for everybody else if I, you know, cater to just to my own individual clients or someone else's, right? This has got to be something that everybody needs, and not a big step backwards. So that's kind of how we run it. And, you know, we have a mailing list, but we don't take votes, right? There's no voting. There's no, you know, it's just, we all try to get on the same page. And then the main, you know, it'd be obviously chaos if everybody could just contribute to the regular project. But we do have, like, international projects. So we have Spree_IA18N, which is the internationalization version of Spree. And there's, like, I don't know, like 40 different languages has been translated into. And that we let people, people say, hey, I want to help with the Polish translation. And we say, okay. And then we just hope that, you know, all the Poles that are using Spree kind of keep us aware if there's anything, you know, going on, because we can't read Polish. So...
Now, this is clearly not a labor of love for you. So what's the financial model for you?
It's not a labor of love?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, you're doing this for business, right?
It's not only a labor of love.
Not only a labor of love. There we go. That's the word, only.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Spree is totally open source. There is no enterprise version of Spree. So,
right.
You know, yeah, ultimately is a labor of love. Like, I love writing cool software, and I think... That's what open source is great. Like, for people who listen to this podcast and don't actually do open source and just use it, you know, the sooner you get involved in a project and can contribute in some way, it's gonna make you so much better programmer and just kind of open you up to all sorts of different experiences and ideas. And so it is a labor of love. I mean, like, because I wasn't making any money on it for a real long time, right? But I thought it was an interesting problem, and I believed that it just needed to be solved. And so it started out that way. You know, then I had a consult. So the financial model then is, that's an interesting topic, right? How do you make money with open source? My wife asked that for the first like 4 years of the 5 years. Cause I'd be like, well, we have this many followers on GitHub. She's like, or the worst is when somebody is making, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars using your software for somebody else, right? Like, oh, they just built blahblahblah.com using Spree, you know? Like, did you get paid? No. But it's cool. They're using our stuff. Like, but, you know, a lot of people make money through open source doing consulting. So that's what I did, right? Mm-hmm. But it went from open source pays dividends in a bunch of ways, right? So at first, it's just a great experience and it is a labor of love. Like, most of open source is written, or, you know, in the evenings or during lunch hours or when your boss isn't looking. And then if you're lucky, you can do it as a job, right? And that's what I mean. That's all I really wanted to do, is write great software and make a reasonable living. So I'm super happy doing that. But then you can also make a name for yourself in your, you know, community, right? So like, hey, so when it comes time to find a job, all of a sudden it's like the next kind of like payoff or reward is like, hey, you have an online resume that people can see the quality of your code and see how you handle discussions and disagreements. And, you know, like, hey, it's kind of like a management and coding experience laid right out there. And then, you know, not too hard to find a job. And so I got hired at a place that was interested in doing more, you know, Rails e-commerce. And so that, you know, was, and then I started a consulting company where I did freelancing. So people start, you know, even though the software is totally free, there are people out there who are using it for very not free type enterprises, right? Building huge e-commerce sites with Spree, and they want to go to the person who created it, right? They want to go to the experts. So they go to us to help with that. So that was the consulting part. And now we took some venture investment last summer from a company called True Ventures. And they're also behind WordPress. They're investors in Automattic and Puppet, two big open source projects. They're in some other open source projects too, but those are probably the two that you would know the most. And
did they invest in are they investing in the SaaS part of this? Because that's what I was going to ask about real quick.
Yeah, they're interested in, they're interested in monetizing Spree. Not everybody can install the software themselves, as we discussed at the beginning, right? On their own VPS. And it's a huge market growing. It's all over the world. And we have some, I guess, like what they call traction in the business, of big sites using it. So they see the potential for it. And so they don't, investors don't like consulting. So if you're thinking about getting investors for your open source project, like, you'll have to have a story to tell them that's not consulting based. And in our case, we spun off the consulting company and we're focused on the product. But what's cool about it is our product is actually just a thin layer, a complex but relatively thin layer on top of the open source software. Mm-hmm. So this is actually very unique. So if you use the SaaS product and you outgrow it, because we would have people come to us all the time on the consulting side and say, hey, what happens after I outgrow Shopify? Or they say, I have outgrown Shopify. Or even before I built Spree, I say, why don't you use Shopify? And they say, I'm going to outgrow it. I have big plans. So it's going to be pretty easy with a click of a button to just jump literally right off of the SaaS model and onto your own VPS, right?
They can install Spree Commerce and kind of keep going from there, but grow it on their own terms as opposed to keep dealing with the SaaS service. Is that available now, by the way? The SaaS service?
You can sign up for it in beta, yeah.
Okay.
And I did if you look on the website in the blog, I did a demonstration of the alpha or version with Robert Scoble a while ago. So you could kind of see, because some of the things we do in the SaaS model is like, we don't believe in, we want to expose it to non-programmers, right? Because ultimately it's great. Like we love programmers, we're programmers, and Spree is always going to be open, free, and available to programmers. And we're always going to keep making it awesome. But, you know, that limits how much Spree can be used when you think when you think about Drupal or WordPress, right? Like, we want to be like that. You know, there's no, you know, we're starting to feel like there's no reason why we can't build the, you know, Spree equivalent of that. And to do that, you have to go beyond the technical people. So, and we happen to be, you know, lucky to find investors that kind of, they really get it. They get the open source part. They're not fighting it. And so like the SaaS version has an editor that's pretty innovative that will allow you to customize the look and feel of the store without any code. You know, there'll be a little window. You can drop in some CSS, but you don't have to learn Liquid or some other templating language. You just like, and it's kind of, it's context sensitive. So you're like on the shopping cart page, you're like, I don't like how that shopping cart looks. You can press the little design button and the thing will come up and, you know, change the layout, whatever, pick an existing theme and kind of go with it. And so it's just about making it more accessible to other people. But hey, for all that work, we're going to charge a little bit of money, but you can always use, there's nothing available really on the SaaS product that's not available on Spree. In fact, if anything, it's a little bit simpler version of the open source product. So I think it's really cool that you're going to be able to jump onto the open source version and just keep running with it if you want. Right. So as your store gets big. And the best part about open source for anybody who's still like wondering, should we embrace open source in our organization or whatever? It's like, there's a built-in market for your software, right? Like there are people all over the world now that know how to use Spree. And so as opposed to if I just built my own e-commerce system for you and then left or got hit by a truck or whatever, like it's going to be doubly hard to find somebody to kind of deal with that. But if the system is based on Spree, and which is in turn based on Ruby on Rails, you know, at a minimum, I mean, you have to pay them, but you can find a Ruby on Rails programmer, right? They're everywhere. I mean, they're in short supply, but hey, in worst case scenario, you can teach yourself some Rails, right? But you're not starting from scratch. Like, what is this guy doing? So you have that advantage, like with going with open source and going with a SaaS product based on open source. It's, you know, that's got that going for it too. So I think that the, you know, investors are hoping that we can, you know, attract customers who to the product who say, hey, I love Spree and it seems pretty cool, but this is a little overwhelming for me, or I'm not ready, or I don't need this level of customization or complexity yet.
Are you going to call the SaaS version Chewy Spree Commerce? Because I love Chewy Spree. It's good.
We're trying to avoid any trademark, right? I mean, like, so Spree is not in any way affiliated with the candy. No, it's so the working name is SpreeWorks, and for the SaaS product.
Were you concerned about that? I mean, where'd you come up with, just real, we're almost to the end of our time, but real quickly, where'd you come up with the Spree name?
It was first called RailsCart, and so and then somebody suggested, like, hey, you should talk to the guy who created Rails, David Hanemar Hansen, and see if he objects to that, right? Because you're using, you know, the word Rails in it or whatever. And so I emailed David and I said, hey, do you have an issue with me calling RailsCart? And he's like, yeah, it implies that, he's like, it just implies that it's official e-commerce thing for Rails. And right. I'd rather, he's like, plus you can do better. You know? So I was like, okay. So, you know, we had a contest that we asked people to vote on names and, you know, and so, yeah, I had a little concern that Spree might be a problem. Like, I thought it was Spree right away, but I was like, oh, this is the candy and things. But really, the way opens, you know, trademarks and things work, it's within a specific area.
Right. Nothing. You're not selling candy, so it should be okay.
People have suggested, like, oh, you should give the candy away at the conference or, you know, do this or that. But we really, you know, I think that gets into we probably get ourselves into trouble, right, you know, later. People, right. You know, inflating that too. So
never kick a sleeping dog. No.
Yeah. And then we decided to also ask the people for advice on the, on the logo, right? So the Spree logo is here. Just pull back. There we go. So got a guy going in the cart, and then, you know, a little ASCII old school kind of
happy face.
Yeah.
For those that aren't seeing the video, you have to go to the website to see the logo. We're not. It's hard to describe on the audio here, so we'll see. All good. You know, we're just about out of time, as Aaron also pointed out. And I just wanted to say we've covered a lot of stuff. There's been a lot of, and we could probably keep talking for another 2 or 3 hours. I'm sure that's kind of the things that would happen at a Spree conference as well. By the way, you had me at Guinness on Spree conference, and I think it's I don't know if that's anything related to the beer, but that would be a great thing to go see.
No, in the beer. It's in the brewery.
Oh my God. Oh no. No, don't tell me about this. No, I don't want to know then because I want to go. Anyway, did we cover everything that you wanted to cover? Sorry. Did we cover everything you wanted to cover, or is there still some stuff that you really want to make sure our audience is aware of before we let you go?
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, like, look, people can tweet some questions. We have an IRC channel ourselves, Spree on Freenode. And so that's a good place. And we have a great mailing list. So if you have questions or feedback, just drop us a line and we can, I guess, answer them individually. we like to answer questions in a public forum, like on the mailing list though, or IRC. But yeah, I can't think, I mean, if you're not using Ruby, give it a try. Ruby's great. That's really, you know, if you're thinking of quitting programming and, you know, you can't bear yourself to write another line of code before you quit, try Ruby. And if you're not using cool. Git, you know, another Linus is like a double god in my books with just Linux and Git on top of it. You know, Git almost more important to me than Linux. And so that's another great tool for managing your open source projects. If you're not already using Git or you're kind of scared of it, don't be afraid. It's much better than Subversion or whatever you're using. So those are my plugs.
Very good. Very good. And of course, now I'm going to get yelled at if I don't ask my two traditional questions, which is what's your favorite text editor?
I'm going to alienate half the audience, right, with whatever I say.
Yes, that's normal. Don't worry.
They're used to it.
Great Emacs. I'm a Vim guy.
Vim. Okay. Well, Vim will work. Vim's one of the big ones. Oh, I thought you were going to say TextMate, though, but maybe not.
You know, I do use this thing called Sublime Text 2 or something like that. It's it's like TextMate. Yeah, TextMate was very big in the Rails community, but they never got updated. The running joke is TextMate 2 is coming out any day now. So, people kind of moved on and discovered Vim in the Ruby space. But in general, it was kind of refreshing going from a big, clunky Java IDE to to text. So, I mean, really, if you're using Vim, Emacs, or TextMate, or Sublime, you know, you're in the right, on the right path.
And I actually already know the answer to this. Probably your favorite scripting language, obviously, at this point would be Ruby, yes?
Yeah, Ruby.
Okay.
So, another one.
Not in the Perl column again.
Yeah, I know. eventually there'd be something better than Ruby, but no, I'm a Ruby guy.
Perl 6, right around the corner.
Check it out. Look, hey, I mean, like, you do what works for you, right? If Perl's working for you, use Perl, but you owe it to yourself to try something new every once in a while. I mean, you don't have to use it the second it comes out, but, you know, if people you trust and respect, like, say, hey, this is something worth checking out, that's the best way to get turned on to new stuff. So,
well, those of us in the Perl community, actually say that it's really nice that Ruby's out there because it's a great prototype for Perl 6. So we're letting them shake out all the bugs. So it's nice.
For not coming out. Isn't Perl 6 in the works for a while?
Perl 6, if you go to Rakuto.org, you actually get a usable version of Perl 6 right today. And in fact, it just keeps getting better and better. It just doesn't have the CPAN behind it. And that's the big problem. It's hard to adopt something that doesn't have the size of the CPAN.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, hey, no, you know, Perl's great too. I mean, I have no hatred for Perl people. Do what makes you happy.
I have no hatred for anyone else who chooses anything else as well, because it makes it easier for me to get a Perl job.
Look, I'm not going to denigrate anybody's efforts, right? Everybody who's out there putting out good stuff and cares about writing good software, like, you know, they deserve our encouragement.
Great. Well, like I said, we're out of time here. I don't want to belabor the point. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
Very good. That was Sean Schofield. I got that right now, I hope. Speaking to us about Spree Commerce, Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting. I mean, the whole discussion was interesting. And like you say, we could have gone on for a long time. But, you know, having kind of just briefly dabbled in trying to set something up like this, I mean, it is a nightmare. So, I mean, having so many good alternatives, and certainly this is one of the top ones, I think, of what I've checked out and doing my minimum research here. But it certainly seems to be a really good one to check out. And, you know, the fact that it's based on open source, I really like their model. I like having the SaaS version available where they can make some money that way, and then, you know, but still use the same underlying software so that people can pick it up and move on if they want to move on to their own, you know, need to host their own e-commerce system. I think that's great. I think that's a great way to go.
Well, I like it in that it sounded like it was a really good framework, but it had a lot of nice defaults. You know, that's mm-hmm. one of the hard things to get right when you're doing a framework is having something that's sort of just out of the box, sort of does something, you know, something sensible because all the defaults are correct, but that you have enough knobs and dials and levers and switches to be able to flip it into whatever you want to actually turn your real thing into. And having something that's, it's hard to design that. It's really hard because I've done my share of frameworks and things as well. And it's just really is interesting to be able to pull that off. Another thing I thought was interesting was just all the compliance and the issues around being a financial transaction. I know that I have my insectcruises.com client, Neil Ballin. I've been working essentially on an e-commerce site with him for years, which is why my ears sort of perked up at this when we were talking about setting the show up a while back. And one of the things that gets me, we talked about it in the chat room here, was PCI compliance, where you have to be very, very careful about how even your website runs. You have to have certain things about the security level of the SSL that you're running just to make sure that OpenSSL version 1.2 is used or whatever the latest version is. And also, like, where you can store credit cards and how you can store those just a real mess. So I'm very sensitive to this because we're obviously going through a lot of that processing right now, especially as Neil ramps his business up to even greater levels. So I'm real happy with that. Anything else before we move on?
No, that's it. I think it's really interesting. Like I said, I got out of the selling business a long time ago. I don't want to sell anything if I can help it ever again. But, you know, for people that are selling stuff and, you know, especially in the maker community at this point, there's a lot of people that are moving from hobbyist maker to actually getting into actually selling the stuff that they make, and you know, they've done their prototyping and now they've got something that they can produce. Like, for example, I'm looking into getting a sprinkler control system or a irrigation control system based on Arduino, and I was mm-hmm. going to build it myself, and then I saw that this guy had basically done all that work already, like a couple of years ago, and had put this together, and now he's selling it. And so, of course, what does he do when he wants to sell it? Well, he's got to set up an e-commerce system, right? So that he can do that. So, I mean, I think especially in the maker community, this is something that is happening right now in a big way. People wanting to take their stuff to the next level and actually sell it. And, It's this kind of software that enables them to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, great. And like I said, we're running out of time. So let me get down to the upcoming guest list here. That's there's the awkward transition for the week. It's that we're running out of time. So I'm going to talk about it. OpenShift next week. That's free cloud hosting from Red Hat. New service they're going to be offering. I don't know how they're going to make money doing it for free, but I'm sure they'll figure some way out. Following that, Gen 2, which is a variant, a Linux distro that basically builds everything from source all the time. And we're going to find out why it works that way. We're going to have a representative from the Apache Software Foundation on to talk about that whole infrastructure that's behind the scenes for that, especially all the projects that are involved. We've got a number of projects on this show that are part of the Apache Software Foundation now. So talk about the process there. LiveVirt, which is virtualization, basically putting some software between your application and all the different kinds of virtualization systems like KVM and VirtualBox and things like that. So that intermediate layer being used in some of these higher level things. LibreOffice, the fork of OpenOffice when Oracle took over, or maybe even when Sun sort of, I don't know where it was. You can't talk about Aaron, I know. But anyway, so somewhere in there, we're going to talk to whatever the path is, we're going to talk to LibreOffice people. And rounding out Q2, Excito, which is a home media center. They sell a hardware product, but they also have the software available as an open source thing. So you can have a nice home media server that can talk to all your devices and stuff. A lot more people on the short list, twit.tv/floss, to see, there's a list linked from there to see what we've got in terms of upcoming bookings and upcoming potential bookings. I will be opening up Q3 shortly, so you'll be hearing 13 new names added to the list, hopefully fairly soon. You can also follow us at Floss Weekly on Google+. We're also Floss Weekly on Identica and Twitter. And you can find out as soon as I book a new guest. I post as quick as I can. I can also usually post a reminder for this week and even a reminder for an hour or two before our live taping. We actually tape this show. Old term, but you know what I mean. We do something about recording this show live, though, in a live audience. If you can go to live.twit.tv at 9:30 a.m. on Wednesdays Pacific time. And if you watch the tweets and stuff, you can find out how close that is to now. And we also have a chat room. We have taken some of the questions today from that chat room there. So it's always nice to be able to talk and interact sort of directly with our guests. We really appreciate questions in the chat room because it helps us sort of guide things that we might not be looking at in terms of getting our guest in. You can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter and Identica, but more likely I'm posting these days lots and lots of stuff to Google+. So I'm Randall L. Schwartz on Google+. Speaking of which, if you follow me, you'll also know that I'm going to be in New York City on the 24th through 26th of May. At least one meetup is planned for one of the evenings. Don't know what else is happening, but I'm out there prior to a cruise to Bermuda the following week. I'm going to be in Madison, Wisconsin for YAPSE North America, the Internet of the Pearl Conference North America. I've got a speaking gig there. That'll be June 12th through 16th. I'm going to be in Madison. So if you're in that area or nearby, watch for my tweets and we'll see where I'm going to be. That's enough plugging for now. Aaron, anything for you?
Yeah, just three real quick things. First of all, coming up on Monday, I'll be on All About Android again. So definitely tune in on Monday to All About Android here on the Twit Network. Also, Maker Faire is coming up May 19th and 20th. I will be there as well. There's a gazillion people there in the Bay Area. I think they had like 100,000 people there last year. So it may be a little difficult to find me, but I will be there. And if you see me, you better say hi. Definitely say hi. I'd love to, you know, if you're a listener of Floss Weekly, definitely, and you see me walking around, definitely say hi to me there. And as always, add me to your circles on Google+. That's where you can find about all the things that I'm interested in, including Android and making things in open source and all that good stuff. So add me to your circles on Google+ and drop me a line and say hi.
Very good. Very good. And Aaron, thanks for taking that long drive all the way from your home area to the Petaluma Brick House. Again, you can always tell because he has the greatest mics when he does that. He's got the really cool mics. I only have the kind of cool mics. So thanks once again for being my co-host.
You bet. Anytime.
Very good. Very good. Well, I hear that music coming up and you know what that means. We'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.